follow the work first and follow the weirdness. People are becoming more open to hybrid forms and to genre-defying writing. There, I wasn't trying to reach a huge audience, but the more I see, the more I realize that there is a growing audience for this kind of work. I think people are hungry for work that's different and that speaks to something new through the form.
This is Erica Stern, author of Frontier, part ghost story, part medical reckoning, and part exploration of what it means to cross the threshold into motherhood. In luminous experimental prose, Stern weaves together personal narrative, historical research, and fiction to tell a harrowing and beautiful story about birth, transformation, and survival. Welcome to the London Writers' Salon podcast, where we go behind the scenes with writers to explore the craft of writing and the art of navigating a creative career. This interview was hosted by Lindsay Trout Hughes. And in this conversation with Erica, we dive into the process of writing hybrid nonfiction. We talk about experimenting with form and what it means and how we might craft genre-bending memoir. Without further ado, we hope you enjoy this conversation with Erica Stern.
Welcome, Erica, to the London Writers' Salon. So delighted to have you here for a million reasons. Frontier is one of the most formally daring books I've read in a long time. And full disclosure for everyone in the room, I acted as assistant editor on this book, so maybe we will get to chat a bit about that as well. But this book feels super close to my heart, so it's such a thrill to get to chat with you today.
It's wonderful to be here. And yes, Lindsay was very integral to the formation of this book and its publication. So I would love to get a chance to talk about that with her.
Oh, thanks, Erica. I wonder if we can start by, if you can just share a bit about the book to provide some context for this conversation about hybrid nonfiction. What do you mean when you talk about hybrid nonfiction, and how does your book fit into this category, this subgenre?
Sure. I think hybrid nonfiction is a fairly broad term. And I think it's anything that kind of deviates from straightforward, fact-based narrative accounts. And even within that, I think there's some room to argue that there might be hybrid forms creeping their way into newspaper articles or magazine articles, maybe newspaper articles a little less so. But for me, it's also, it can be about blending genres. So using some of the tools and, in my case, actually bringing in fictional threads to the work, weaving in other forms within the nonfiction narrative.
And I think your book is such a perfect example of this. So for those of you who have not read Frontier yet, came out last week, I urge you to read it. It's stunning, but it's part memoir, part ghost story, part medical history, all woven together. And it does such a beautiful, it resists traditional form. And that's really what I want us to dig into today. And I wonder, when you started writing this book, did you know immediately it wasn't going to take the shape of a traditional memoir?
I think I had an inkling, but I did not know what shape it would take. I only had an inkling because I felt that I was not a nonfiction writer at heart. I had most of my training and experience had been in fiction writing, and I had been working on short stories in graduate school. And when I set out to write this narrative, I felt myself sort of resisting traditional narrative nonfiction, but I didn't know what to do with that resistance. And it took a very long time for me to find the path, a path that felt true to the work and true to the material and the story I wanted to tell, and also true to that resistance, where it wasn't just resistance for the sake of not doing something standard, because I think that can be a trap to just do something for its own sake. But it really was something that felt true to the message that I wanted to get across. And it was sort of the only way I could tell this story well and do it justice.
I wonder if you can say more about that, because I think you're so right that this, now having spent a long time with this book, I know it and love it very intimately. And I can't, it's the only way this story could have been told, I feel. And I wonder how you arrived at the specific hybridity of this book. Did you experiment with different forms and structures? Did you wake up one day and say, I'm going to write a fictional Wild West ghost story and just place it alongside my own personal story? How did you arrive there?
It was a complete accident. And I think it just speaks to the importance of like writing and seeing where the writing takes you. So I was writing, I was trying to figure out where this narrative was going, very early drafting stages. And I was just sort of giving myself the space to experiment. And I was writing the nonfiction narrative, which is a memoir. And it's about the difficult experience I had with the birth of my. And so it was based in a hospital and it was sort of emotionally intense. And I was also wondering to myself and, you know, to people around me, like about the difference between giving birth today in a modern hospital and in the past without modern medicine. And I spent a lot of my mental energy when I wasn't writing, thinking about that and feeling like my experience, even though it had been in Chicago in a hospital, felt somehow like it had happened 100 or 200 years ago. And so I was thinking about that and I was writing and I was also needing a break from the intensity of the memoir narrative. And so I just started to imagine myself in a different world, in a different place. And I wrote it. I wrote, at first, it was like a very short paragraph interspersed with the memoir narrative. It wasn't its own separate chapter. It was just like a little aside. And I was writing in a sort of fragmented way anyway, weaving together various strands of research and meditation on different ideas that were coming up and the narrative. So it was one more strand. It didn't feel like anything sort of huge or different. And it wasn't a ghost story. It was just a sort of historical fragment of what if this had happened, you know, 200 years ago, however long ago. And over time, I began to realize that that narrative actually needed space. And it was a crucial piece of how I was going to make sense of the experience that had happened to me and actually say something new about that experience. And so I began to expand on it. I pulled it out from the main narrative into its own set of chapters. I spent a lot of time in revision working to expand that narrative and to make it, and this is something that Lindsay was incredibly helpful with in the editing process, making it more in conversation with the personal story. And then the ghost story came by necessity. I did not set out to write a ghost story, but as I was imagining this woman, this version of myself in the Wild West, you know, I realized that I likely would have died in childbirth, but I still needed to narrate the story. I wasn't finished with the narrative. And so I had to make that person a ghost. And so I wrote a ghost story.
Well, the result is so powerful. And maybe we'll leap ahead a little bit, but I just want to say that I'll mention again, I was previously assistant books editor at Barrel House, and I was reading through submissions, through hundreds of submissions. People submitted their full manuscripts. And I came across Erica's manuscript, which, as she explained, details this traumatic birth experience. And maybe folks who are familiar with my writing know that this is something I also experienced as well. And Erica, you wrote about this moment of feeling like you had left your body and you were hovering in the corner of the hospital room and watching what was happening to you. And it knocked me loose. It was one of those profound reading moments where I was like, ah, me too. That's exactly what happened to me. And then when the next chapter introduced this ghost story, there was this just profound relief I felt as a reader that somebody was saying something so true about this particular type of birthing experience. And not only what that does to you physically, but also emotionally. And I was so excited by how you were doing it, by just offering this fictional story alongside. I found it so profound and so powerful. And I'm wondering, something you do so well is you take these multiple modes of writing, the memoir, the ghost story, the research, and it all feels like one cohesive book. Were there any strategies that you used to make sure that all these threads felt really cohesive from start to finish?
Oh, I wish I had a succinct answer to this, because I think I spent a lot of, I think I was not efficient in my editing, but maybe that was the only way to go about it. And I think I just had to become very, it had to be like my second language, this book, or a first language. I don't know what the right metaphor is, but I had to know what I was saying and all of the different pieces so intimately, because I spent so much time moving the pieces around, braiding them together, expanding on ideas in one place and another, the same idea, but maybe 10, 20 pages apart. And it took a long time. And there were a lot of like false starts and things that I would change and then realize it wasn't working and go back. Part of that just maybe like my strength as a writer does not lie in my organizational capacities. I don't outline. I did a lot of reverse outline with this book. So once I had, you know, a solid draft, I went back and tried to figure out, I guess that would be my strategy, what I was trying to say in each each section. What was the sort of thesis argument? It wasn't an academic essay, but using that framework to try to narrow my focus and give it a little bit more of a like a driving force. So that was the thing I did. But there were a lot of like sitting with the material day in and day out and writing and writing and not really seeing a lot of progress until I finally saw progress. I don't know if that's motivating for anyone.
No, it is. I actually saw like cheers of relief when you were like, I'm not an organized writer. I was going to ask how you kept track of the different threads of these different things. Were you color coding things? You said you were moving things around, or was it just like a more intuitive, just like ongoing presence with the work?
It was more intuitive. I mean, I did have a, you know, a second screen. I got a second monitor so that I could have versions open on both. Like I could have an old draft and a new draft, and I could physically see the old draft and move paragraphs. And that was really helpful because there was a visual component to the work where I had to actually like see what I had and where it needed to go. But I didn't color code. I did also print out a lot of drafts, and I highlighted and notated in the margins, but sort of in a very intuitive way, not in any kind of, I know a lot of writers who work with outlines and with pasting color-coded text to walls. And I've tried with other work to sort of literally cut up the material and put it on the floor and move it around. And it's never worked for me. I don't know why. It's just not the way my brain works. So for me, having it on two monitors and just very simply seeing the document and then the blank page with the new document. And I did do that. I started chapters from scratch because it was too hard to just rearrange. I needed to like kind of refresh and start from scratch.
I love hearing about this process. And it's interesting because Lily Danziger, who is the editor on this book, famously loves to print things, cut them into tiny sections and tape them to the walls of her apartment.
I was thinking of Lily, and I've known other people who've done that too.
But really, really fascinating to hear about your process. And if you have questions for Erica, do drop them in the chat. We will circle around to them at the end, and I might weave some of them into the conversation. Malia is asking about how you integrated the research. Was this also more intuitive, or do you want to talk about that a bit?
It was. I really followed my instinct with the research. It started out with no research. At the beginning, I thought I was just writing an essay. I didn't think it was a book. And I thought it was just basically the first chapter of my what turned into the book. I thought that was just going to be an essay. And at some point, I realized it was longer. And so it was just the personal narrative. But then I found myself like really thinking about, I think it was this, it started with this idea of this historical woman who I felt like this version of myself, and then started to do some research into the history of childbirth and the history of women's health. And one thing sort of led to another. And I started to get books from the library and read articles online. I would find an interesting anecdote and go deeper. And I also did some research, like I weave in a lot of sort of like biblical stories and Jewish thinking. And so I had taken like a religious studies class in college. So I pulled out that version of the Bible and I did some reading and I did some research around that. So it wasn't just the health aspect, but it was very intuitive. And I let the writing dictate where my interest dictate where to go with that.
I remember reading this and the first time I read it, and there were passages from the Bible and excerpts from books and anecdotes about you being in a childhood production of Godspell as a young Jewish girl. And I was like, oh, this is for me. Like this is because my favorite writing is a writer following their obsessions, following their curiosities, and just like taking a question and pursuing it as relentlessly as they can, which you've done so beautifully in this book. And I wonder if there were any sort of questions or themes that were anchoring you as you were experimenting with these different forms, or conversely, was it also just a more intuitive pursuit?
There were questions, I think, and I think that was what drove my research. So I'm not a religious person in a traditional sense. And I never thought I would write a book that was sort of this Jewishly informed, but I found myself just thinking a lot about what the framework of religion does for people in moments of crisis, and about faith and questions of kind of like what, not necessarily the purpose of life, but like, where do we find answers? Where do we find comfort? Those questions. And I found that there were a lot of resonances between those questions and the things that I had learned throughout my childhood, just as a Jewish kid, especially a Jewish kid growing up in New Orleans, where we were sort of the clear minority. And so a lot of this was in contrast to what I was learning about Christian faith and the idea. And I found that there were a lot of things that really resonated with the way that Judaism framed questions, that when I was in the hospital with my son, I felt, I'm not sure comfort is the right word, but I felt like it lined up with what I was experiencing. So this idea that there aren't necessarily clear answers to a lot of questions, and we have to sit in the waiting and the unknown, I found a lot there. And I was really interested in exploring that, for example. And then the issues of like the way women have been treated in history and the way so many of the sort of patriarchal structures that we might think of as in the past are really present, even in spaces that try their best to remove those influences. And so I became really interested in that. And I was very interested in that from the beginning. So there were some driving questions that I had.
And I think the hybrid nature of the book and how it resists the traditional narrative does such a good job of you resist tidy answers about any of these big questions you're asking. And I think that the hybridity really supports that part of the work. I want to make sure we talk a little bit about publication. I think in the call for submissions at Barrel House, there was a line that was like, send us the thing you think is too weird to publish. And I wonder if you ever worried that the hybrid nature of the book would make it difficult to find a publisher.
I did, absolutely. And then some of that was true. It did take a while to find a publisher. I had also been, at the same time that I decided to submit to small presses, I had been querying agents. And I got a lot of feedback that was like, this is really interesting, but kind of the equivalent of, I just don't know what to do with this. And basically, like, how would we sell this? Who would buy this? And I knew this was the only way to tell the story. So I didn't think I should go back and make it less weird. But I did question whether it would ever find the right home. And so it just took a lot of persistence and like really sticking with the project and believing in it, which sounds corny. And there were many times when I was like, well, maybe I'll just put this in a drawer and come back to it. But then, yeah, I got the call from Barrel House, or I got an email and then a call from Barrel House. And I knew immediately that Lindsay and Lily were the right editors, because if anything, they wanted to make the book weirder. And I was like, this is it. These are the people I need to work with.
That's so true. I remember having a call with Lily before we called you. And we were like, this is so incredible. It's so delicious. And it was just, we immediately knew it was for us as well, which was such a thrill. It was such a thrill as an editor to have that experience. And I'm wondering at what point, you know, you said you were querying agents. Were you always in parallel submitting to small presses, knowing that they would take a chance on a more unconventional book? Or was there a point when you decided that you would start thinking outside of the box of sort of big five publishers?
I think it was pretty early on that I started querying small presses. It was a little bit harder to find because you have to wait for open submissions periods or contests. And I was doing everything very slowly. I have 3 kids. And I was working a part-time job for some of this. So it was not like I was sitting down and sending out 10 queries a week. But yes, I think early on I realized that I would be just as happy with a small press. I cared less about the sort of like label on the book or the money, because I knew no matter what, this book was a niche book and hopefully will reach a lot of people. But my driving, you know, the driving force behind trying to publish this book was not to become a best-selling author. It was to get this book into the world and for it to reach the right audience and for it to be the best book that it could be. And so I was really open to, I wanted, you know, a quality small press or an agent, and they both seemed equally great to me.
And you know, I think there's nothing wrong with wanting to get published at a big five publisher. And we get a lot of people asking questions about the market and what's selling right now and sort of trying to like figure out how they fit in there. And I think you're such a wonderful example of just like writing the book you have to write, no matter how strange it is. Like, you clearly were not considering the market when you're like, I'm going to write a ghost story and mildest ghost story and memoir about birth trauma. And the result is so stunning. And so I just want to thank you, because I have found it hugely inspiring to just sort of the radical commitment to telling the story you need to tell. And it found a home. And is turned into this gorgeous book. So I just want to thank you for that inspiration.
Well, thank you for giving it a home. I feel really lucky.
Yeah, of course. And I wonder, do you have any words of wisdom for folks out there who are writing things that are maybe a little strange, or they're working on genre-defying projects and they don't fit neatly into any tiny category? What would you tell to someone who's thinking about writing that type of project?
Well, first, I would say the work will be best if you follow what it needs and you listen to what the work needs. It's worth publishing the best book or writing the best work, no matter what the outcome is, because there's so many other ways that you can have a platform or, you know, make money or whatever it is that you want to do that don't involve writing a book. So follow the work first and follow the weirdness. And I also think that people are becoming more open to hybrid forms and to genre defying writing. And so I just said before, you know, I wasn't trying to reach an audience, but I actually think there is an audience out there. I wasn't trying to reach a huge audience, but the more I see, the more I realize that there is a growing audience for this kind of work. I think people are hungry for work that's different and that speaks to something new through the form. And so I've really been encouraged by what I'm seeing. And so many of the other writers I'm watching are doing this kind of work. And I think there's a big, hopefully it's not a trend, hopefully it's here to stay. And so I don't think it's necessarily sacrificing one for the other.
I hope so too. I just picked up a new book from Grey Wolf Press that is so strange. It's so weird that I feel relieved somehow. And
What's the book? It's
called Bitter Water Opera by Nicolette Polek.
Yeah.
Also a ghost story. And it's so strange. And I think I was trying to sit with like the relief I felt at reading it and its weirdness. And I think that it's, and the same sort of like relief slash ache I feel at reading your book is that it is undeniably human in its strangeness. Do you know what I mean? I feel like there's a lot of really slick stuff coming out right now in the age of AI. And you wrote something so wild that could only have come from the wilds of a human mind. And I think that's really
trying to be AI proof in my writing.
Yeah, well, you're doing it. And I wonder, a couple more questions from me, and then we will turn to questions in the chat. So keep them coming.
Hello, listeners. Just a note from us at the London Writers Salon. Our interviews are recorded in front of a live online audience. And so at this point in the interview, we turn to audience questions. Would you like to be a part of the live audience and ask your own questions? Head to londonwriterssalon.com for more information. You can buy tickets to the online events or get free access to them as a member.
I want to talk about writing about things that resist language through this hybrid structure. I'm curious. I don't want to assume why you pivoted to hybrid when writing about your son's birth and this sort of traumatic experience. Is it because it was difficult to write about the facts of that experience that you started bringing in these other elements?
I think so. I think even more than the facts, it was this sense that there was a danger of me writing a story that had already been told and that I wasn't interested in writing. I think I felt this real fear as I was writing of becoming too emotional in my writing and too cliche, not emotional, because I think emotion is important, but cliche. Could I say it in a way that wasn't just repeating what a lot of people had said? And I was really struggling with that, especially as a fiction writer, because I felt like I didn't feel like I was a memoir writer. So there was already that level of discomfort. And then adding on, okay, I'm writing this trauma story. How do I keep it from the cliche? And I think I found my way through by drawing on these other texts, this other narrative. When I felt like I was headed for a cliche, I could back up and I could bring in a quote from a historical doctor and then talk about that quote and think about how it related to my experience. And so add something new. Or I could go to the Wild West and I could write that experience, but in a more like maybe things going even more wrong and sort of dive into the emotions and the fictional character. And so it gave me a release from worrying about the cliche.
That's super helpful. What do you feel that the ghost story element allowed you to do that a straightforward narrative couldn't?
Well, I think you touched on a part of it earlier when you were talking about that feeling of floating up above the body. And I felt that so strongly. And I thought, I've heard about this from other people when people have talked about dissociation and moments of trauma, but to feel it myself was like this completely other thing. So I knew I wasn't going to be able to completely capture that in the straightforward memoir writing, because I had read it before and it still hadn't described what I was feeling. And so the ghost was like, okay, this person is literally floating. She's incorporeal, watching the world take place below her. And so I could really say something different about that experience. And hopefully, you know, I don't want to pretend that everyone's going to know exactly what I experienced, but hopefully give people more of a sense of what dissociation is like. Does that answer your question? I think
it does.
I lost track of what the initial question was.
No, that definitely answers it. I guess I'm going to ask one more question before we turn to questions from the audience, because I'm finding this conversation so inspiring and I see people in the chat are as well. For writers who are tuning in, who maybe have never considered writing anything that's hybrid and they're curious about it, but they're not sure where to start, are there any practices that helped you get comfortable with form breaking?
Did a lot of reading, not necessarily while writing this book, because I tried to read things that were very different from what I was writing while I was working on the book, because I felt like there would be too many voices in my head. But in graduate school and leading up to it, reading lots of lyric essayists who maybe didn't explicitly bring in other genres, but were playing with form, were bringing in more of a meditative voice. So doing a lot of reading just in the background of the work. And then I think practices, this isn't necessarily advice, but I sort of by default had to write in fractured moments because I had young kids. And so I think that allowed me to play with the form, because I would leave a section and come back to it with a different frame of mind. And so that could be something to play with as well.
Super helpful. So I think for the sake of time, I'm going to ask questions on folks' behalf. And Lauren was wondering if you could share a little bit more about your process of reverse outlining. Lauren says, I'm a panster and often chaotic. What did that mean for you practically when you were reverse outlining the book?
So I think what I did is I printed out, very literally, I printed out the full manuscript. And then I took a pen, made marginal notes about what I thought a chapter was about, even if there were things that really didn't fit into that set structure, but what the overall sort of argument was. And then I wrote what that argument was, just a sentence or two. And then I would go back to that paragraph and figure out what needed to go and move somewhere else, or what needed to be expanded upon in order to make that a more central piece of the structure. And then I also looked at what the overarching, taking all the sentences that describe the chapters and seeing what the arc of the entire manuscript was. Did it make sense? My book doesn't kind of resist beginning, middle, and end as a concept, but there is a beginning, middle, and end. There has to be. And so what did that look like?
Hope that's helpful to you, Lauren. And thank you, Erica. All right. Hayar, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. How does the hybrid nature of the book tie in with the themes and with your own sense of self?
Well, I think a lot of the theme that I was exploring was the fragmentation that can occur just for any person experiencing birth and beginning parenthood, and then also person experiencing trauma. And so I was feeling fragmented. I felt that the experience of becoming a mother was fragmented. And so the hybrid nature of the structure really worked for me in order to express that sense of being fractured. And I also was really interested in this idea that I think a lot of parents feel this, the same person before the birth and after the birth, or for that matter, before and after many experiences in life. And so I was able to like philosophically explore that idea through the structure.
You know, it's interesting. We read some words of wisdom before Writer's Hour every day. And totally coincidentally, today's words of wisdom from Jeanette Winterson, the first line was, to be human is to be hybrid. And I was like, here we are, ready.
Yeah. And I think I've really come to resist the idea that we're sort of like solid selves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we go through so many phases.
And the book just does such a gorgeous job of that. It is such a fracturing experience. And I think the way you've written it, just you feel in the body as you're reading a sense of that fracture. Thanks for the question. All right. Janie asks, ghost conjures up stereotypical images. What made you choose this term versus, say, energetic presence or entity?
Wow, that's a really good question. I do not know if I have like a, I didn't consider any other terms. And but I understand, right? Like there's the Halloween ghost. I could have used specter or something else. I actually don't remember when the first time in the book she is named as a ghost. I'd have to go back and look. So at first, it's just like the accepted, you see her die and then continue to watch what's happening. And so maybe that was my way of getting around those stereotypical frames and associations that we have. And then I will say, though, I do have a figure in the book. I don't want to give too much away, but with the baby in the Wild West section becomes a Dybbuk, which is like a figure from Jewish mythology that sort of goes like it's kind of like a haunting that occurs within another body. And so I did kind of expand out from that, from this simple ghost. I don't know, simple is not quite the right word, but from the ghost into something more specific and more from my tradition, although I had to do a lot of research. I didn't really know much about Dybbuks before I set out to write this. But that's a great question.
I love that question. Tyree asks, have you ever heard of biomythology? I haven't. And what do you think of that format?
I have never heard of it, so I don't know that I have anything to say, but I'm intrigued.
Me too, because I was recently thinking about how much of memoir writing is we're doing our own personal myth making. And something you do in this book is so your son's name is Jonah, and there's this experience of him in the NICU, and you relate it to this to the story of Jonah and the whale in the Bible. And I wonder if you were thinking about just like memoirist to memoirists, I sometimes get nervous about laying down a narrative line on my life. It's something I feel compelled to do and also something that makes me nervous. Were you ever conscious of doing some like personal myth making? Were you ever worried about saying to yourself, because I've put this in print, this is how it was forever and ever? Amen.
Yeah, I think I was very aware that I was doing personal myth making. And I think, I don't know if I worried about it, but I think now that it's in print, I remember details from that experience that I think would have been long lost. And so it was more like personal memory that, which is maybe mythology, because memory is, as we know, is not necessarily the same as what actually happened. So we're doing a version of translation and myth making just in the act of remembering. And then by writing it down, right, I was solidifying that. I don't know if I worried about it, but I was definitely aware of it. But it was just a part of this process of examining the experience. And I think, right, I was exploring other kinds of mythology. And so this story could have been a different myth that I told. And I did experiment with fiction a little bit at the beginning when I was so uncomfortable with writing memoir. And so maybe that was my attempt to create a different mythology. Let me make myself a completely fictional character, write a short story about the birth. And that didn't feel true to me for whatever reason. I think I had to write this personal narrative. But there were some sort of like early attempts to make a different myth, maybe one that was a little less, more disconnected from me, that felt a little bit like there was less at stake if I wrote a short story.
I'm glad that you said that about like what's at stake, because I feel like reading this, you sense that you're taking real risks on the page. Did you have to give yourself certain permissions to do that as you were writing this book, or and how did you give yourself that permission?
Yeah, I am not that comfortable with sharing my personal life. I think that's part of why I shied away from nonfiction for so long. I mean, there's also like a lot of nonfiction writers who write essays that are not personal, but I shied away from it because it's just not in my comfort zone. I'm not in my comfort zone doing that. So I definitely had to push through and just give myself permission to share, to hope that other people would find something interesting in what I had to say, and that it was sort of an important story to get out there. And that it was, I also think I had to risk putting other people's stories out there. It's primarily my story, but there's my husband, there's family, and there's Jonah. And I talked with Lindsay and Lily quite a bit about how to make sure that I was doing a good job with his story, because it's not necessarily all mine. It's definitely not mine all to tell. And so I took a lot of care with that.
We have to bring you back because we could do a whole hour talking about the ethics of writing about others, especially I think writing about children. We talked about this. When I did a first draft of my book, my son was a toddler, and it feels very different now that he's almost 11. So you have to come back because I want to dive into this. But
I would love to.
Two more questions I want to ask before we wrap up. Charlie's wondering how it feels now that the book is out in the world. And I'm wondering, too, what the reception has been like.
It feels great. The couple of weeks, maybe months leading up to the publication, I was incredibly anxious. I would just wake up with this sense of like, I didn't even know why I was waiting. I mean, I knew why, but it was just a free floating kind of tension in my body. And it was like the book came out and that kind of lifted. I think that there was this sense of waiting for it to happen. And now that it's out there, it's been a really wonderful feeling to have it in the world and to see friends sending me pictures of them reading it or their kids reading it or on a library shelf somewhere or a bookstore shelf. So that's been wonderful. And there's a sense of relief for sure to have this project that has been part of me for almost a decade out in the world. And the reception has been great so far. I've been like really thrilled with the reviews that have come out. It's been on a couple of lists of, you know, books to read or must reads for the month or things like that. And so I think it's really finding its audience. And I think the people who have reviewed it seem to really understand it on a deep level. So I've been really grateful to be read like that. I don't think that that was a foregone conclusion.
Well, I'm so excited for you and for readers who are going to get to experience this book. So I think this is a great question to end on. Emily asks, for those of us who don't have any formal writing training, do you have any tips for the self-editing process in memoir? How do we weed through which parts are simply therapy and which parts keep the story propelling?
That's a great question and one that I really spent a lot of time and effort struggling through myself, even as somebody with some formal writing training. So I don't think it's specific to training versus not training. I think the best advice I can give you is to find a reader. Doesn't have to be a trained writer, but to find someone who you trust with your work and whose taste you value and who also give honest feedback. And at the same time, I think to hold on to your own sense of the work. So if you give it to someone else and they say, put a big X through a paragraph that you just feel like is essential, you have to be willing to argue for that in your own mind and to keep it if it feels crucial. But I think that would be my advice. Find a reader, find a writing group. This seems like a great community, a great place to start to find that. And then also read a lot. Read things that you love, read things that people recommend, because I think in reading, you can really internalize a lot of those lessons without even knowing it, what propels a narrative. And read critically, think about what you like and don't like in a work. And then there are a lot of great opportunities for workshops and residencies and all various kinds of things that are open to people regardless of their training. So be on the lookout for those as well.
Thanks for the question, Emily. And that helps. All right. I'm going to share a link to Frontier. Thank you so much for your time, for your honesty, and for this beautiful book. I'm so thrilled for you and so excited for the readers who are going to get to experience it. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah. Thank you, Lindsay. And thank you all for the wonderful questions. It was great to be here.
Until we write again. Bye, friends. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the London Writers Salon podcast. If you enjoyed our chat and you'd like to join us for the next one, please visit londonwriterssalon.com for more information on how to become a member. As a member, you will have access to our interview archive, to our workshops, and our cozy online writing community. Whatever kind of writer you are, it is an excellent place to make new creative connections and focus on your craft.
And if you struggle to find time to write, you're welcome to write with us at our daily Writer's Hour writing sessions. It runs Monday to Friday, 4 times a day, and all you need is the desire to write, something to write with, and something to cheers us with. We think it's the world's best virtual co-writing space for writers, creatives, or frankly, anyone who just needs to get some work done. Visit writershour.com to sign up and join us.